Chapter 28. Saying to them, while the door was leaving its latch, to think that I, who go from home, but once in a while, and hardly then, should have been there this morning. 'Tis news you have brought us, then, Christian? Said Mrs. Eobright. Eh, sure, about a witch, and ye must overlook my time o' day, for, says I must go and tell them, though they won't have half done dinner. I assure ye it made me shake like a driven leaf. Do ye think any harm will come out? Well, what? This morning at church we was all standing up, and the pa'son said, let us pray. Thinks I, one may as well kneel as stand. So down I went, and, more than that, all the rest were as willing to oblige the man as one. We hadn't been hard at it for more than a minute, when a most terrible screech sounded through church, as if somebody had just dried up their heart's blood. All the folk jumped up, and then we found that Susan Nunsich had pricked Miss Vi with a long stocking needle, as she had threatened to do, as soon as ever she could get the young lady to church, where she don't come very often. She've waited for this chance for weeks, so as to draw her blood, and put an end to the bewitching of Susan's children, that has been carried on so long. Sue followed her into church, sat next to her, and as soon as she could find a chance in went the stocking needle into my lady's arm. Good heaven, how horrid! Said Mrs. Eobright. Sue pricked her that deep, that the maid fainted away. And as I was afeard there might be some tumult among us, I got behind the base vial, and didn't see no more. But they carried her out into the air, 'tis said. But when they looked round for Sue she was gone. What a scream that girl jied, poor thing. There were the pa'son in his surplice holding up his hand and saying, sit down, my good people, sit down. But the deuce a bit would they sit down. Oh, and what do you think I found out, Mrs. Eobright? The pa'son wears a suit of clothes under his surplice. I could see his black sleeves when he held up his arm. 'Tis a cruel thing, said Eobright. Yes, said his mother. The nation ought to look into it, said Christian. Here's Humphrey coming, I think. In came Humphrey. Have ye heard the news? But I see you have. 'Tis a very strange thing, that whenever one of Egdon folk goes to church some rum job, or other is sure to be doing. The last time one of us was there was when neighbor Fairway went in the fall, and that was the day you forbid the banns, Mrs. Eobright. Has this cruelly treated girl been able to walk home? Said Clem. They say she got better, and went home very well. And now I've told it I must be moving homeward myself. And I, said Humphrey. Truly now we shall see, if there's anything in, what folks say about her. When they were gone into the heath again, Eobright said quietly to his mother, do you think I have turned teacher too soon? It is right that there should be schoolmasters, and missionaries, and all such men, she replied. But it is right too, that I should try to lift you out of this life into something richer, and that you should not come back again, and be as if I had not tried at all. Later in the day Sam, the turf cutter, entered. I've come a-borrowing, Mrs. Eobright. I suppose you have heard, what's been happening to the beauty on the hill. Yes, Sam. Half a dozen have been telling us. Beauty? Said Clem. Yes. Tolerably well favored, Sam replied. Ord. All the country owns that 'tis one of the strangest things in the world that such a woman should have come to live up there. Dark or fair. Now, though I've seen her 20 times, that's a thing I cannot call to mind. Darker than Tamsin, murmured Mrs. Eobright. A woman who seems to care for nothing at all, as you may say. She is melancholy, then? Inquired Clem. She mopes about by herself, and don't mix in with the people. Is she a young lady inclined for adventures? Not to my knowledge. Doesn't join in with the lads in their games, to get some sort of excitement in this lonely place? No. Mumming, for instance? No. Her notions be different. I should rather say her thoughts were far away from here, with lords and ladies she'll never know, and mansions she'll never see again. Observing that Clem appeared singularly interested, Mrs. Eobright said rather uneasily to Sam, "You see more in her than most of us do. Miss Vi is to my mind too idle to be charming. I have never heard that she is of any use to herself or to other people. Good girls don't get treated as witches even on Egdon." "Nonsense, that proves nothing either way," said Eobright. "Well, of course I don't understand such niceties," said Sam, withdrawing from a possibly unpleasant argument. "And what she is, we must wait for time to tell us. The business that I have really called about is this, to borrow the longest and strongest rope you have. The captain's bucket has dropped into the well, and they are in want of water, and as all the chaps are at home today, we think we can get it out for him. We have 3 cart ropes already, but they won't reach to the bottom." Mrs. Eobright told him that he might have whatever ropes he could find in the outhouse, and Sam went out to search. When he passed by the door, Clem joined him and accompanied him to the gate. "Is this young witch lady going to stay long at Miss Tover?" he asked. "I should say so. What a cruel shame to ill-use her. She must have suffered greatly more in mind than in body. 'Twas a graceless trick such a handsome girl to. You ought to see her, Mr. Eobright, being a young man come from far, and with a little more to show for your years than most of us. Do you think she would like to teach children?" said Clem. Sam shook his head. "Quite a different sort of body from that, I reckon. Oh, it was merely something which occurred to me. It would of course be necessary to see her, and talk it over, not an easy thing, by the way, for my family and hers are not very friendly." "I'll tell you how you might see her, Mr. Eobright," said Sam. "We are going to grapple for the bucket at 6 o'clock tonight at her house, and you could lend a hand. There's 5 or 6 coming, but the well is deep, and another might be useful, if you don't mind appearing in that shape. She's sure to be walking round." "I'll think of it," said Eobright, and they parted. He thought of it a good deal, but nothing more was said about the Estacia inside the house at that time. Whether this romantic martyr to superstition, and the melancholy mummer he had conversed with under the full moon, were one and the same person remained as yet a problem. 3. The first act in a time-worn drama. The afternoon was fine, and Eobright walked on the heath for an hour with his mother. When they reached the lofty ridge which divided the Valley of Blooms End from the adjoining valley, they stood still and looked round. The quiet woman inn was visible on the low margin of the heath in one direction, and afar on the other hand rose Miss Tover Knapp. "You mean to call on Thomason?" he inquired. "Yes. But you need not come this time," said his mother. "In that case I'll branch off here, mother. I am going to Miss Tover." Mrs. Eobright turned to him inquiringly. "I am going to help them get the bucket out of the captain's well," he continued. "As it is so very deep, I may be useful. And I should like to see this Miss Vi, not so much for her good looks as for another reason." "Must you go?" his mother asked. "I thought to." And they parted. "Here is no help for it," murmured Clem's mother gloomily as he withdrew. "They are sure to see each other. I wish Sam would carry his news to other houses than mine." Clem's retreating figure got smaller and smaller as it rose, and fell over the hillocks on his way. "He is tender-hearted," said Mrs. Eobright to herself, while she watched him, "otherwise it would matter little. How he's going on." He was, indeed, walking with a will over the firs, as straight as a line, as if his life depended upon it. His mother drew a long breath, and, abandoning the visit to Thomason, turned back. The evening films began to make nebulous pictures of the valleys, but the high lands still were raked by the declining rays of the winter sun, which glanced on Clem as he walked forward, eyed by every rabbit and field fair around, a long shadow advancing in front of him. On drawing near to the furze covered bank and ditch which fortified the captain's dwelling, he could hear voices within, signifying that operations had been already begun. At the side entrance gate he stopped and looked over. Half a dozen able-bodied men were standing in a line from the well mouth, holding a rope which passed over the well roller into the depths below. Fairway, with a piece of smaller rope round his body, made fast to one of the standards, to guard against accidents, was leaning over the opening, his right hand clasping the vertical rope that descended into the well. "Now, silence, folks," said Fairway. The talking ceased, and Fairway gave a circular motion to the rope, as if he were stirring batter. At the end of a minute a dull splashing reverberated from the bottom of the well. The helical twist he had imparted to the rope had reached the grapnel below. "Haul," said Fairway, and the men who held the rope began to gather it over the wheel. "I think we've got some, Matt," said one of the haulers in. "Then pull steady," said Fairway. They gathered up more and more, till a regular dripping into the well could be heard below. It grew smarter with the increasing height of the bucket, and presently 150 feet of rope had been pulled in. Fairway then lit a lantern, tied it to another cord, and began lowering it into the well beside the first. Klim came forward and looked down. Strange humid leaves, which knew nothing of the seasons of the year, and quaint natured mosses were revealed on the wellside as the lantern descended, till its rays fell upon a confused mass of rope and bucket dangling in the dank, dark air. "We've only got in by the edge of the hoop steady, for God's sake," said Fairway. They pulled with the greatest gentleness, till the wet bucket appeared about 2 yards below them, like a dead friend come to earth again. Three or four hands were stretched out, then jerk went the rope, whiz went the wheel, the two foremost haulers fell backward, the beating of a falling body was heard, receding down the sides of the well, and a thunderous uproar rose at the bottom. The bucket was gone again. "Damn the bucket," said Fairway. "Lower again," said Sam. "I'm as stiff as a ram's horn stooping so long," said Fairway, standing up and stretching himself till his joints creaked. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.